That music means one thing. You're listening to the Popmatic Podcast.
Yay!
Last month, I described us as a library-themed pop culture podcast, but really, we're more of a pop culture-themed library podcast. Think about that for a while. And I'm Brian.
I'm Bill.
And Amanda's holding it down for the girls' team.
All right. It's the first week in October. That means it's Banned Books Week, which is hard to say. I've been reading that a lot, but it's hard to say. Banned Books Week. We're going to feature some of our favorite banned and challenged books. But before we start, we have a little celebrating to do because it's our fourth year anniversary.
Woohoo! Yay!
We've never missed a show in 4 years, though I'm sure we've screwed some up. I've definitely got a lot of things wrong.
I had like 10 seconds of bad one time.
Yeah? And so how do we celebrate? Everyone quits.
Oh.
Lisa quits. Crystal's not here. Apparently, going on vacation is more fun than sitting in a room listening to Bill talk about horror movies. Okay, I see how that is, if that's what you want to do. So, we're so close to banned books. We're almost there. I know you want to know what banned books that we're interested in. And I'm just going to, teaser, not just us. You know, for 4 years, you've been listening to the Popmatic crew's recommendations. You're going to get recommendations from people from all over the library in Banned Books Week. But before we start, let's talk about what's happening at the library. Bill, what you got?
Well, Movies at Main, it's that time of year, October, and we're going to be showing two chilling screamies. The first, on Saturday, October 6th at 2 p.m., we're showing The Car. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, no way to stop the car. Listed among the 100 most enjoyable bad movies ever made in the official Razzie Movie Guide, The Car stars James Brolin, Kathleen Lloyd, John Marley. And don't miss our Legends of Film podcast interview with director Elliot Silverstein. He gives an honest appraisal of The Car. Also, he's had a long, varied career. He talks about working on Route 66, The Twilight Zone, A Man Called Horse, Cat Ballou. Good stories. Highly recommend listening to the interview. Also, on Saturday, October 20th at 2 p.m., we're going to show Island of Lost Souls. This, of course, is based on the classic novel by H.G. Wells, Island of Dr. Moreau. And Island of Lost Souls tells the story of an obsessed scientist conducting grotesque experiments on humans and animals on an island in the South Seas. A shipwrecked sailor finds himself trapped on the island and forced into a social experiment with Moreau's most promising female mutant. Sounds intriguing. The movie stars Charles Laughton and Bela Lugosi and the Panther Woman. So, also I should add, this has been a movie on, people have been wanting it to come out on DVD, Blu-ray for the longest time. Come down to the Nashville Public Library Saturday, October 20th at 2 p.m., and you'll get to see this on in glorious black and white projected onto our big screen. So, two good flicks in October, doing our part for the Halloween.
So there's also so many other events happening in October. We're just going to maybe just talk about the ones we really like. But concerts in the courtyard continue. First, Rachel Rodriguez, which is, man, my tongue is mute today. that was oxymoron, wasn't it? I occasionally get things wrong. This is the Brian Gets Things Wrong podcast. Rachel Rodriguez will be here, awesome Tex-Mex singer, and also Jason D. Williams, who's the reincarnation of Jerry Lee Lewis, is usually what we get. But Amanda's also going to tell us about some awesome author events happening.
Yeah, you're going to have to take a nap in October because we're going to keep you pretty busy. At the Salon 615, we have a bunch of pretty big names headed our way. It starts beginning of the month with Michael Chabon, then Carolyn Kennedy, Louis Erdrich, and Dennis Lehane. And for those of you who are thinking, oh, I don't want to go all the way downtown to the main library, we've got two authors that are going to be part of our Salon 615 at offsite locations. Sherman Alexie's coming, as well as Patricia Cornwell, who I believe is coming to university school. So you can check all that out. Brian, I'm sure we'll link to our website in the show notes and get you all the more information about where and when and all the fun you can have with Salon at 615.
Yes, I'll link to where you can get all the details, because we actually have nice microsites for all these events where you can get all the details.
About tickets.
Yeah.
And all that good stuff.
Sherman Alexie is a favorite of mine. I've met him before. I've seen him speak a few times. He's going to be here on the 18th at Montgomery Bell Academy, because if you're in Nashville, you know what MBA means. So that's where he's going to be. Some other events that are happening. Pearl Cleage is going to be here, which is awesome, amazing. She's going to be here on the 23rd. I don't think it's going to be marketed as a Salon at 615 event, because that was kind of last minute. She'll be here on the 23rd of October. And the heavy, the biggie.
Oh, yeah. Crystal and I are pumped. October 23rd at 6:15, Dennis Lehane will be here, writer of Shutter Island, Mystic River. He's promoting his new book, Live by Night.
I love that, because that just really shines a spotlight on the dichotomy here in the Popmatic podcast. So the heavy that I met was Margaret Atwood.
who will be here
October 27th, and she'll be here at the main library for a free lecture at 10 a.m. She is the Nashville Public Library Literary Award winner this year, or is it called the Nashville Foundation Public Library Foundation Literary Award winner?
She won
the Literary Award this year, and she's the coolest author that's won the literary award since I've worked here.
You gotta get on board with that.
I mean, everyone that won before is good, but this is the first one I'm really personally excited about. And
that John Updike's a hack, anyway.
Should be really cool. He did write a golf book later in his career, so.
Because I'm such a big golfer.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm Margaret Atwood hasn't done that yet. But I'm sure, you know, someday Dennis Lehane and Sherman Alexie will also write their golf books in their time. But so also, as you probably know by now, the mayor has chosen Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale for Nashville Reads, which is really cool. And that book has been banned in many places, so it fits with our theme today.
Apparently that's a little risque in a couple portions, but I haven't gotten to that part yet.
I don't know if it can be risque post-Taliban. It's just really relevant. Way heavy for the podcast. I mean, you know, monsters, there's some murder or something. No Taliban here. So we're inching towards banned books, I promise. Okay. But first, you know, something has come to my attention. Okay. Apparently there is this series of so-called vampire novels aimed at teenagers, right? And in these books, the vampires sparkle in the daylight. Now, put the kids away. I heard there's even a scene where a vampire eats a baby out of a woman, eats a fetus out of a woman. And on the street, these books are called Twilight. And I haven't read them, but I think they should be banned. I'm just saying.
I've read them, and I'm okay with that.
Sure.
You should really write some fan fiction based on those books. I bet that would do well.
Yeah, I'd take the sparkling out and replace it with something else.
I can't make it worse, really.
Boom. Okay, so it's Banned Books Week. And Banned Books Week, I think sometimes it's hard to explain what that is, because it's something that happens in library land, and I think it's hard to explain to library patrons and people in the public what it is. It's like a disconnect. I'm calling you out, library land. I'm calling you out, ALA. But the idea is that libraries now, one of our professional values is to let people read whatever they want to read from all points of view, and we help protect the First Amendment by doing that. I mean, that's like one of those deals where libraries are about that. And I don't know if that was actually the case, like, in 1915. Like, the libraries weren't about that. They were about burning German books during World War I, right? So things have changed. And, I mean, this is contemporary value that libraries have. So one of the things that happens during Banned Books Week is that we bring attention that there's still a lot of people that want to censor books that they don't agree with, that don't represent their point of view, and that libraries help protect the right to everyone to read what they want to read. And I can tell you here at this library, we have every point of view presented in, you know, in our collections, especially in nonfiction. There's, I mean, so much crazy stuff that actually probably doesn't get challenged because it's so fringe that no one else is, seeing it, you know, to care. It's interesting, too, when you go through the list of banned books, there's a book on there that you love because it's all just classics. So many of these books have been all things to all people. Pick a book, you know, and someone has thought that it's been bad and try to ban it. So today we're just going to talk about the books that we love. We're going to celebrate our right to read these books. And some other staff that couldn't be here today, they gave me their picks. And so I'll tell you about the books that they loved and they want to celebrate. So for me, I think it's going to be Blast from the Past. I've talked about this book before, but Naked Lunch by William S. Burroughs. It always gets banned. It's probably one of the books on there that's probably more controversial. And the irony is that I read that book when I was a teenager, and I don't really know if I understood it. But one of the things that that book did for me was it stopped me from taking drugs, especially opiate drugs. When I think in the media, even at the time in the 90s, like Kurt Cobain was really popular. And I think that there was absolutely this heroin chic happening. Like the whole OxyContin crisis was beginning to happen in the States. And I did not get involved with opiate drugs because I knew from reading Naked Lunch and other books by William Burroughs that, listen, that's not a glamorous world. Like, and if you read Naked Lunch, that world is hell world. Like, so if you want to go to hell world, if you want to be inside like a Heronius Bosch painting, you know, you should do that. So it actually kept me, it probably had the opposite effect than I think some people would have. I think the idea is that if you read that book, you would go crazy and think all these bad things in the book are good. Whatever. So I love that book, kept me off drugs. And I think I just wanted to read it because it was controversial. So I think if people try to ban things, it has the opposite effect.
I would love if someone would ban a book I would write because that would guarantee sales.
Exactly, you know? Exactly.
Was Burroughs on trial?
Yes.
I thought they took him to court for that, for it being profane and,
yes, and
obscene.
It was one of the last obscenity trials in the States for a work of literature. Mm-hmm. And he won. And, you know, in there were all these literary scholars, and Allen Ginsberg had to fight for that book to actually be published. So if he would have lost, that book actually would have been properly banned in the United States. And since he won, I mean, the modern era, like most books, no matter how rotten they are, Shades of Grey, are never banned for obscenity. Actually, we've talked about this before, Shades of Grey, there's so many books that are just like Shades of Grey, actually so much worse. It's like, I mean, why this book gets all this attention, I don't know. But so that was my first, Naked Lunch. The second was Absolute True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie, which is a young adult title. And that book was so good and so family-friendly that I actually chose to read it once during a short story program here out loud. And I think it gets banned because it's about a kid on an Indian reservation, you know, and some really bad stuff happens on that reservation, but it's not particularly graphic. And I would think that, you know, the idea is that you can survive bad things. You know, bad things can happen to you and you can go on and good things can happen in your life. I think it's a fiction book, but it's clearly called The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian because it's very, like, autobiographical. Like, listen, you can come from a bad situation and you can become a famous writer. You know, you can become Sherman Alexie. I think it helps children through a tough time. I wanted to specifically point that one out for once. He's coming here and he's an author I like. But two, just this past year, there was a big flame war in the comments section of the New York Times because someone had written basically that young adult literature was basically becoming just this cesspool. It's only about bad things that were happening. And then Alexie, maybe I can link to it. I you know, he wrote an editorial back, and it became this big, awesome debate about what young adult literature should be. So I wanted to point out that book. But Amanda, what you got?
Well, my all-time, like, if someone asked me, what is your favorite book? And that's a very hard question because it depends on, you know, what I've just read and what's on my brain. But usually my answer is Gone with the Wind, because I read that for the first time when I was in fourth grade, and I've probably read it, I don't know, four or five more times since then, which may hold the number of record of rereads in my reading world. But it obviously has been challenged predominantly because of the nature of free versus slave, and like it kind of glorifies antebellum Southern slavery values, and you know how the I don't know nothing about birth and no baby. You know, I mean, it makes the slaves look stupid and the white people look like saviors. And I mean, I think that in the context of the story and from where, you know, Margaret Mitchell was writing from, she was Southern. She was born in Georgia, lived in Atlanta her whole life, and that was just the history that she had been handed down. So I think it's very true to that. I think she tells an excellent story. I mean, I'm, you know, maybe if I had more involvement in that aspect of the world, it would bother me more. But I just think it's a good book. I'm not really sure exactly. I mean, I would think that the fact that it's almost 1,100 pages long would do more to ban it than the fact that there are race relations in it. But I don't know. I think it's worth all 1,100 pages of reading. So if you haven't read Gone with the Wind, you should read it.
Well, I think this comes up a lot in banned books, but there are all these Southern writers that now retroactively want to be banned. And it's like, you know, you can't erase history, you know, so.
Well, it's like they did that with Mark Twain, too. The one guy has just rewritten it and taken out all of the, which, I mean, I think you lose the author's voice when you do that. I mean, that's.
Yes, and, you know, one of the picks that I was going to talk about later was our new library director, Kent. He's highly involved in the Freedom to Read Foundation. And, you know, the initial blog post on their revamped website was him writing about the quote-unquote New South edition of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, where the notorious N-word, right, is replaced with a different word that's not as controversial. And he points out that this is censorship like any other kind of censorship. And especially that book, right?
Yeah,
which is
seriously?
Actually like
it's a boy's adventure.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. Well, we'd even like that book, though. I think it's like Gone with the Wind. There's lots of different ways to read that book.
Mm-hmm.
But like that book in particular, I mean, is really about race relations and slavery. So why would you want to like whitewash history? Forgive the Twain pun. Like, you know, why would you want to do that? And in particular, Mark Twain, like if you know a smidge about Mark Twain. Mark Twain is rolling in his grave.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he is so mad.
If there's a ghost somewhere, he's haunting the guy that
did that. He's haunting the guy that did that. And I'm not going to say the guy's name, because actually I ran across that book today.
Really?
And I was like, you did this just so you could get in some press. I mean, why else?
I don't even know the guy's name. I mean, I've seen the book, but I did not.
Well, he's a for real Twain scholar, so he has to know that
That's
Twain would not be okay with. But the first thing I thought, too, though, was, okay, I'm a child of the internet, remix. You know, authors don't own a text. It's out there. We're going to grow from it. You know, write some pornographic fan fiction.
No,
maybe
there you
actually,
go.
Now that I
that's
about,
the answer
wait,
to everything.
Wait. Now that I think about that book, I was like, no, let's not do that. That's not good. Well, exactly. Don't do that. Don't take out the unpleasant words.
Just go read Gone with the Wind and be happy.
Well, it comes up with William Faulkner. It comes up with Gone with the Wind, you know?
Yeah, there's a questionable language in Gone with the Wind.
Well, but, like, how about you read it and then you decide for yourself what's the lesson to be learned here?
That's where you have to decide. You know, you learn the lesson. And
especially if you're an adult, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You already know that lesson if you're an adult.
Well, I'm just saying there's a reason why Naked Lunch is in the adult section, right? I guess it does get tricky with, like, absolutely True Diver Park Indian is in the young adult section.
Well, and I read Gone with the Wind when I was in fourth grade, but I'm a little ahead of the reading curves.
Well,
you know, and it didn't bother. I mean, it was a good story.
So what you got, Bill?
Well, my banned book is Of Mice and Men by John Steinbeck. And this novel was published, or I should say novella was published in 1937, tells the story of George Milton and Lenny Small, two migrant workers who go from ranch to ranch during the Great Depression. George is intelligent, or I should say he has street smarts of the two. Lenny is mentally challenged of the two. However, Lenny is strong as an ox and can do the job of several men. When I first read of Mice and Men, I was struck by these two characters who need each other. I personally find the book to be about loneliness. It depicts the frustration of people who have dreams, and yet always something undermines these dreams. Lenny is a case study in lethal innocence because of his size and him being mentally handicapped. He is totally misunderstood, and this leads to tragic events. I've always enjoyed Steinbeck's works, and this is one of my favorite because the characters, the era, the events are memorably written. It's a short novella. However, it packs quite a wallop. I also have to mention, since I'm the film nut, there have been three film adaptations, and they all follow the novella closely. I still think the best one is the 1939 version with Burgess Meredith and Lon Chaney. However, still read the book because, or the novella, because no filmmaker can recreate Steinbeck's strange and hallucinatory ending at the end. When I hear this book's band just talking, I'm still a little befuddled. Like, I've read that it's banned because of words, you know, language. It, too, has a racist, supposedly, which it doesn't, but that's part of the problem. Also, it's deemed as anti-capitalist, which I guess, but my point is if you're picking out those little things, you're kind of missing the whole point of the story. I mean, it's, you know, it's about friendship and loneliness and, you know, people needing each other and so, and people's dreams. And so when you start to pick out, I sometimes wonder, don't you see the overall beauty and power of the story itself?
Well, I think especially, too, with Steinbeck, he was writing in a very difficult time. During the Depression, right. The Dust Bowl. You know, life was hard then. It wasn't all, you know, sunshine and puppies. And, you know, sometimes the puppies die.
And I believe he, you know, was himself a migrant worker during this time. So he was writing of experiences.
I guess, the way I always think about it, too, is, you know, if you read it and you don't like it, then awesome. Like, write about the fact that you don't like it. Like, that's why for me, that's why America's Great. I'm going to shoot myself for being so hokey. But, like, if you read Gone with the Wind and it's like, well, I don't like this because this is racist, then I guess you don't like it. Exactly. If you read Of Mice and Men and you're like, this is anti-capitalist, then, you know, then don't like it. That's great. If you read Naked Lunch and you're like, man, this is just garbage, horrible wretchedness, right? Then
I only made it halfway through Naked Lunch and then I gave up.
There you go.
You know, but Brian's more than happy to love it. That's fine.
I'm just, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is why
it's what makes podcasts interesting.
Yes. And our library is good in America.
That's right.
I'm not going to say, you know, there's a lot of libraries in the world, you know, the stacks aren't open. You can't just go and browse. So, other staff members had a lot of other picks. So, Karen, she chose Nickel and Dimed by Barbara Ehrenreich. And that was a book about a woman who tries to live on minimum wage and realizes that it's possible but horrible. Karen said the reason that she liked it was because it made you realize how easy it would be just if you thought you were okay, that it wasn't okay. You know, like financially, how you could just, you know, lose your job and then all of a sudden it would be really hard to try to live. And it's interesting, that's the one nonfiction book that was chosen amongst all the other stuff.
I wonder if that's because nonfiction, you kind of expect it to be grittier and depending on...
I think that with nonfiction, you know, I think people expect it to have a point of view. So when the point of view isn't your point of view, you don't get as upset as much. If the book is like, I hate politician X, it's like, well... Exactly.
If you're on the same page, you read it.
Where I think the idea when we're talking about story, and I think because we deal with popular materials, like we deal with story a lot, the idea is you're trying to secretly interject your agenda into us secretly with this story. So I think that's where that comes up a lot. So Crystal chose The Color Purple. She said The Color Purple is one of the few books that has ever made her cry. It's just she wants to cry again when she thinks about someone wanting to keep this beautiful book from other people. I want to say that's that's funny because a lot of people don't think that Alice Walker is a good prose writer. But anyway.
The story, right?
It's all about the story. You're not here, Crystal. You get picked on. Lesson.
Okay.
So Ron chose the Bible. He was very upset that in other countries, you know, theocracies of that are non-Christian theocracies around the world, they often want to ban the Bible. Ron, I want you to know that I'm aware this is a conservative, reactionary view, and you're trying to punk me, but I put my money where my mouth is when it comes to free speech, so Ron's upset about the Bible. You can come to the library. You can get many different versions of the Bible.
Large print, too?
Yes, large print, too.
And audio.
Lindsay, who's our children's librarian, she chose the third volume in the Harry Potter series, The Prisoner of Azkaban. And she had this really intense experience. She was not a librarian and on a bus coming back from a job she didn't like. And she was reading this book. And she realized how magical, forgive the pun, that children's literature should be. And that she wanted to rededicate herself to children's literature. And then she became a children's librarian. So that's her Harry Potter story.
Well, I would put Harry Potter on my list, too, just because I think that J.K. Rowling is brilliant. And just the fact that she made up, I mean, all of these things that are now, like muggles. And I can't even think of, you know, all the other words that are just commonplace in our, you know, our jargon of our lingo because of Harry Potter. And they just came out of her head. And that's just magical. It's brilliant.
When I help people with the computers, you know, now at work, they're like, why did you do that? And I'm like, I learned it at Hogwarts.
See, Hogwarts is, yeah.
It's funny. It's like, I think some people don't get it and they don't want to say. But anyway.
Well, and I think the sad thing for me about Harry Potter is that so many, like, evangelical groups and went after Harry Potter for being evil and being witches and the devil and, you know, loving power and, you know, and 90% of them had not even read one of the books. And I mean, I think that that's the other part of the bannedness is that are you banning this because someone told you to or because you this is your personal reaction to it? So, I mean, we just have to, again, you read it. If you don't like it, that's okay. You can not like it. But
J.K. Rowling, somebody asked her about that once. I saw an interview. She said she's been to book signings and says not once has a child come up and says, I'm into witchcraft now. It's just, you know, kids get it and adults don't.
Exactly.
I think a lot of times people like to see their name in the paper and, you know, bring upon themselves and attach this so they see this is a good way to do it.
Yeah,
I think it has little to do with, you know, harmful. It's ridiculous.
I didn't pick up witchcraft from Harry Potter. I got that from Buffy. No.
I learned about it reading the Bible. I don't know all kinds of stuff in there. Anyway, so Cheryl, in Popular Materials, she picked To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, that's a good one.
So for her, I think that the experiences in Kill a Mockingbird was very similar to her own. And Cheryl, you're not here. You get picked on. When Cheryl was a kid, she had a haircut just like Scout. Cheryl's my boss. I'm in trouble now.
So, do you have pictures? Can you put pictures in the show notes?
I'll ask.
That would be awesome.
I'll ask. Right? And then Jenna, who is the director here at the main library, she is a children's librarian, and she gave us many really great children's books. And just to illustrate the books that tend to get banned, I'm just going to read them all. James and the Giant Peach by Roald Dahl, Light in the Attic by Shel Silverstein, A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle, A Series of Unfortunate Events by Lemony Snicket, The Giver by Lois Lowry, and Captain Underpants by Dave Pilkey. And I just think it's like, well, okay, so it's all the best kids' books of the last 30 years, basically, you know.
Well, when I was – we read A Wrinkle in Time when I was in fifth grade, and there was discussion about some of the parents didn't want us to read it. I don't remember why, but I just remember that I'm like, and my dad was like, you can read it, that's fine. He read it, and he said it was fine.
Then you automatically want
to
read
I'm
it.
Like, I'm going to read it.
Yeah.
That's
really weird because like,
it's rebellious.
Yeah, you know? I'm reading a bad book. Ooh.
That's the way I feel about, you know, the books that I read. I like that. It was weird, though, because It seems like I kind of perceive her as a Christian author, so it's weird.
She has that. Yeah, that. And that may be part of what the problem was, but...
So you think it was, like, non-religious people that didn't want religious
books?
Well,
my town was pretty religious in general, so I'm not sure. I don't remember what they're... But it had something to do with that on some level, and I don't remember. Yeah. But I just remember there was this big, ooh, we shouldn't read this book. And we're like, I'm reading it.
That's fascinating. It's fascinating. It's weird.
And I think, too, part of the reason banned books, something about them hits you. So they're probably, well-written enough that you get the message, they're probably not going to be crappy bargain bin paperback. I mean, there's going to be something about them that has lasting power if it bugs you enough to attack them.
Absolutely. And, I've heard software political activists say that if you're going to, fight for what you think is right, you can't be polite. So this is the idea that if you don't say something that's a little bit outside of the bounds or has a point, like, you're never going to make any progress.
Yeah.
So if you want to be polite, right, you're not going to be an activist, right? Or if you want to have a message and you're, really, like, thing that's going to make people wake up, you can't, be afraid to offend someone. So I'm down with that.
Yeah. Groovy.
Is that all? I can think of a few more things. Margaret Atwood, The Handmaid's Tale, has been banned many times. So, or attempted to be banned many times.
Yeah. And let us not forget Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five.
Many times. Which actually, the best thing that happened, that was actually banned this year or last year. I think we've talked about it on the podcast. Some organization, I think his estate, sent free copies to students where it was banned.
Which was really, sounds like Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a really, really great. And then speaking of Margaret Atwood, her last book was a collection of essays called In Other Worlds, SF and the Human Imagination. Mm-hmm. And it's a collection of all her essays that she's written about science fiction and science fiction authors over the years. And it's interesting because her defense of The Handmaid's Tale and what she was thinking whenever she read it are in that collection. And also in that collection is her appreciation of The Island of Dr. Moreau by H.G. Wells. And you never think about that book the same way if you read that essay. And then you should also come see the movie here at the library.
Absolutely.
And did we have so much fun talking about banned books that we don't have time for Tickle My Fancy?
We were just tickled by banned books.
So what other books are there that we love that we could talk about to eat up this last bit of time?
Let's see. I know... Once a long time ago, Deliverance by James Dickey, some English teacher got fired
for teaching?
You teaching that. That and Slaughterhouse-Five.
So here in Tennessee, 50 Shades of Grey has been removed from some libraries.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it got removed in Georgia, too.
And
not here. We still have it.
In schools, John Green's Looking for Alaska has been banned.
Yeah, I heard that.
A lot. That's an award-winning young adult novel.
Mm-hmm.
Been banned at Knox and Sumner counties. But you can get that here at Nashville Public Library.
We have everything. And if we don't have it, we can interlibrary loan it for you.
Hey, really quick, what are we going to talk about? Tickle My Fancy. Super fast, hyperactive Tickle My Fancy.
Christmas.
Yes, of course. Who is it? I guess, like...
Well, this is the time of year
wait,
that...
People who don't celebrate Christmas. That probably doesn't tickle their fancy.
People that actually have, performances and stuff during Christmas, this is the time of year where they start to pick Christmas music. Like, churches start their Christmas program music. And I've been picking my Christmas... I bet I spent 10 hours in the last week dealing with Christmas music. And it makes me lonesome for Christmas. So it's very nice that it's not hot out anymore. And now we just need snow and jingle bells, and I'll be all set.
So it's Christmas music.
Christmas music.
All right.
That's been tickling my fancy.
Something completely different. Bill has...
Tickle My Fancy, something Amanda will not attend. It's called 12 Hours of Terror. Go to the Bell Court on October 27th. That's a Saturday. a full day of horror films from noon till midnight. I went there last year. It was a lot of fun. Dr. Gangreen was there hosting the event. It reminded me of what it must have been like in the 70s, going to see a full day of grindhouse films. If you like the horror genre, this is the place to be. The schedule's not up now, but it should be up by the time this airs. Go to www.belcourt.org or Google Belcourt Theater.
Okay, wait. Is there Christmas music in the horror movies?
Not unless they're showing Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Okay, yeah. And I'll just be over at your hot dog restaurant.
Okay, yeah, that'll be good.
Just hang out there.
And that's the same day as Margaret Atwood. So you could go see Margaret Atwood speak and then just do horror the rest of the day. So Tickling My Fancy is a musician, Grimes, her new album Vision, which is getting awesome reviews. The library has two copies. You should put it on hold. That's all I got to say. What's she like? High art, goth, Enya. That's all I'm going to say. Grimes.
Ooh, now I'm intrigued.
The album Visions.
Ooh.
I'm there.
Really cool videos. I'll link to them. Her video for the song Oblivion, one of the best songs on the record. The most subversive video that I've seen in ages. I'm not going to say what it is.
So it's like it would be like a band video?
Well, it's
does
subversive.
It involve a donkey?
Wait.
Band podcast.
This. Wait, what's the other John Steinbeck book? The really famous one.
Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah, this isn't Grapes of Wrath. Why did I think of it? There's a donkey in that, right?
I don't know.
There's a turtle. Okay. The intercapitulary chapters in the Grapes of Wrath involve a turtle. Yeah. That's probably a good spot there.
That was the best part of the book.
For more info, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Org, yeah.
Org, yay!
What's org stand for?
They're those monsters in the Tolkien books.
Yeah. No, those are orcs.
Orcs. Sorry.
If you go to library.nashville.org, you'll probably get some, like, Russian spyware site.
Which could be fun, too.
But org.org. And this, like I said earlier, was our fourth anniversary show.
Woo-hoo.
Woo. So I want to thank everyone that ever worked on the podcast. So that includes Julie, Jeremy, Jesse. Are you noticing a trend?
I'm not part of it.
Liz, guested once. Who else am I missing? I think that's it.
Yeah.
Karen.
Lisa. Crystal. Bill.
We already talked about Crystal.
Uh-oh.
So.
She's my favorite.
And.
Clint.
The elephant not in the room is Clint, who actually does all of the hard work for the podcast, and we hang out and have fun, and then Clint takes our garbage and molds it into perfection.
He does.
And it actually takes longer and probably more work than we do. So thank you, Clint, for 4 years of Chainsaw Massacre.
Whoa! Whoa!
Yeah.
Whoa!